Hello, everybody. It's Jake Sanzana, host of Jake and Gino Podcast, here with my co-host, a multi-family mentor, the coach, chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Day, Gino Barber. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing good, brother. How are you doing this morning?
Always making it happen, big man. Wow, we just got a lesson there in the Northeast, but we have a very special guest today. Today's guest is Matt, a.k.a. the Lumberjack Landlord. He's a ninth grade dropout, but he turned his challenges into fuel. It's got to be like a two-stroke mix for the chainsaw, I'm guessing. Now he helps others do the same with his program. Oh, shit, I'm a landlord. Now what? So, without further ado, Matt, welcome to the show.
I'm super pumped to be here with you guys. I'm excited to get through it.
Get through it. Dude, you got to be present and enjoy it, mate. Lead into
it. Oh, man, we're gonna crush it. Yeah, get through it with you guys. I'm loving it.
So let's hear a little bit more. We're going back and forth a little bit, but ninth grade dropout. You then got into W-2, maybe share that a little bit, because I mean, you said you're 47. It's, I think it's getting easier, but when you're kind of coming up through the ranks to get a good job, especially 20 years ago or whatever, you're supposed to have a college degree. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I heard that a lot. But yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, now it's very different. Now the biggest concern is our company's going to have enough employees, right? Because everybody wants to do side hustles and turn that into their empire. But back then it was, yeah, I mean, a lot. I heard a lot. Hey, listen, this is a college program. You need to have a college degree if you want to work here. And so I was a dropout in the ninth grade, single mom. Not me, but my mom was. And so dropped out, worked hard, really got into sports memorabilia because I love sports. And so I did that. And that's how I supported myself and helped out the family.
You're like flipping Ken Griffey Jr. baseball cards.
Yeah. Right around that age. Yeah. So it was Griffey and Thomas and all those guys.
The Big Hurt.
Yeah. The Big Hurt. Love the Big Hurt. Underrated. But yeah, that's what I did. And that's how I made my money for a few years and then, realized I had to get a big boy job, because that was nice and that was good, money as a teenager, but I had to get something real. And so moved out of my house at 18 and just figured hard start it. And that's what I did. Hard started and worked at a video store, hated that job was making $5.25 an hour. So I was making nothing.
Like Blockbuster or like the local Blockbuster?
I was doing a local one. Yeah, yeah. A local one. Yep. I couldn't get a job at Blockbuster.
You didn't have that degree, man. You need a GED for that shit, right?
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't get a job at Blockbuster. So that was that. And so worked for the video store and worked with a woman that worked at a software company. And I thought what everybody else does, which is, oh, you build computers? That's not what I do at all. But that's what you get as an answer for a real long time until the world became a whole lot wiser as to what software was, but worked with her. She said, hey, come in. They're hiring for a job. She didn't tell me it was a telemarketing job. I went in, got the job as a telemarketer. And the first 1 year contract I signed was for $18,500. And that was it. The rest was history. I basically started working that and I blew every number away and I talked to all the experts that were there and all the seasoned guys and, blew away every number, broke every record that they had. And 6 months later, I was in a rep role. And my very first full month in sales made $10,000 and the rest was history. I was like, man, if you're a good salesperson, you can make a lot of money. This is easy. And so that's what I did. So 27 years later, this February, or 26 years later, this February, I actually retired.
Ogmandino, Gino? Is it Og? Ogmandino?
Yes.
There you go. Right there.
When did you fall in love with real estate?
So after I lost all my money in the dot-com bomb, I was taking the money that I had. I was not a spender. I was a saver. And so I was putting my money aside, putting it into the stock market with my other fellow software, sales guys. And, then
that's what
all
you're told
sudden,
to do, right? That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
This is the path.
Well, this is what you do, right? You get a 401k. That's the way to do it. That's the only way to do it. 401k. And you start saving money and putting it into stocks and, that's what the conversation is at the lunch table. And that's what the conversation is at the, at dinner afterwards. And that's what I did. So I put my money into that. And then the dot-com bomb happened. And in the course of 60 days, I watched, $27,000, $29,000 portfolio at 21, 22 years old, I watched it evaporate and go to almost zero, you know, less than $1,000. That did not feel good. And so I just started kind of thinking, and I said, you know, I need to do something differently. I need to do something different than what everyone else is doing, because I don't want to be subject to these swings. But I was young, I was in my early 20s. And so I just started looking, what is that asset? You know, what's something that I can buy that actually increases in value over time and all the while pays me while it's increasing in value? I kind of like that idea. I also needed something that was slower moving. I believe that the guys in Manhattan, and if you live in Manhattan, you have an edge over everybody else because you're hearing the stories of the bars, you hear the hush numbers, you hear what other banks are working on. And that wasn't ever going to be me. So I felt like it was an insider's game. So based on it being an insider's game, I just said, you know what, we got to do something different. And so I went to, was still thinking about that, but then needed to move because I was too far from work. I got a better job, and I actually tried to buy a place, and I couldn't afford one. Sound familiar? Couldn't afford to buy a place. And so I started looking for a roommate, and I was like, I talked to the bank and I said, hey, if I get a roommate that's willing to pay rent, can we count their rent towards my mortgage? And they said, yeah, of course. So that's what I did. I found a roommate and I said, hey, where do you want to live? And he's like, I'd like to live in this area. I was like, all right, then that's where I'm searching. So long as it's within 30 minutes, so long as it's within 30 minutes of my job. And so that was it. That's how I bought my first place. I got a roommate, signed him onto a lease, provided that with my financials to the bank. And that's how I bought my first place. I house hacked.
Jake, you want to ask a question?
No, I was just saying he's serving the customer from the early days, right? Didn't care about the house for himself. He said, I need the cash. Where do you want to live, bud?
Exactly. So, I was like, hey, where do you want to
go? Very customer focused. I'm just saying that.
I appreciate that. I mean, without customers, I don't have any business. So it kind of works out that way. But that's what we did.
You bought that first deal. And then how did you continue to scale after that?
Great question. So, you know, that was kind of going into the heydays of the market, right? You know, you start seeing no
what
mortgage
year?
Rate. 2003, 2004. So I bought that place in like 2002, and then kind of 2003, 2004 things started to heat up a bit. And then I was like, you know what? I don't want to drive. I don't want that commute anymore. I don't want that, you know, I don't want that anymore. And so I told my roommate, I said, yeah, I think I'm going to sell. And right before I made the decision to sell, I got hit with a $70,000 special assessment because it was a condo. And I was like, well, there goes all that equity. And then I realized, okay, now I'm never going to buy a condo again. Because we got hit with a special assessment that was 70 grand that I was going to have to pay. That was all the equity that I made in the house.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yep. The builder.
Per unit owner.
Yeah. The building.
You can see like 70,000 spread across everybody, but.
No, it was. I was.
They needed to rebuild each unit?
They had to reskin the entire building because the builder used a product that wasn't supposed to be used within 5 miles of salt water.
Uh-huh.
And we were right on the water. We were in a tower right on the water. And so they looked at
it. They had like restucco it or something?
No, they had to pull all of the facing off of so it was not only that, but it was the framing underneath it because that's what was corroding. And
holy shit. Sorry, that's funny.
I mean, you know what? It is what it is, but it helped.
Did you keep it?
No, I sold it. No, still sold it. Still sold it because what I had to do is I wanted to get into something where I was like, I don't have a condo fee. I don't have to worry about this ever having a special assessment again.
Dude,
so
that's
I was
like a nightmare story for someone young that doesn't have money. Some shit like that happens. You like?
I literally was like calling banks going, will you give me a loan? They're like, no. I was like, well, this is what I needed for. They're like, no. And that was even the two banks that were trying to help the building out. But I was the youngest in my building.
How many units in the building?
There were about 120 maybe in the building.
Damn.
That was a lot of money back then. You're talking
good luck trying to collect that shit.
$7 million.
Oh, it was. I think the total project ended up being like $11 million to because they had to do that and the windows and all of the everything. It was a nightmare. And so I learned, you know, so what did I learn? In 3 years, I learned don't invest in the stock market and don't buy a condo.
Holy shit.
You're ahead of about 80% of the population.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. So it was just, so that's, you know, I was blessed that happened early on in my career. Yeah, it almost broke me, but I didn't have a family. I didn't have kids. You know, it was just me. It was like, I could have slept in my car if I needed to. It didn't matter. But it was just one of those
tough
things.
Tough
lessons,
though.
Yeah, horrible. Imagine what that, you know, the 70,000 on the building and then, you know, not getting that equity. And then the 30 I lost in the market, that's $100,000 26 years ago. that makes you a multimillionaire today. And yeah. I had to just restart twice.
Yeah, this is a word to the wise. It's a cautionary tale for everybody here living in Florida. What's going on with condos right now? I almost purchased a condo 3 years ago, but I was like, Jake, I don't like monthly recurring bills. I don't like an HOA fee of $1,000 on a $700,000 asset. It's $12,000 a year. That's just HOA fees. That's not property taxes. That's not insurance. So
plus,
if you have
you're
no mortgage
for city and county taxes in 90% of condos, right?
Because
you're
in the city. And like, so you're looking at like, and then insurance at the time just escalated. So $1,000 a month for an inexpensive condo. Now all of these special assessments are going on. I think the valuations for condos are going to get completely whacked in Florida. Yeah. Because what happened with that condo that actually collapsed, the vast majority of them are underfunded. So when you're going in, this is just anybody listening to this, you really need to get a condo for a great price. And if you can Airbnb it, you're okay, because most of these condos don't even allow you to Airbnb it, maybe once a year. So if you're going with that strategy, just be careful. And you know, the HOA fees is one of those fees that doesn't go away. And if you don't pay it, that is the highest lien, even higher than the bank. So you have to pay your HOA fee no matter what. And it's interesting, as things get tough and these things go into foreclosures, well, everyone else has to start picking up the HOA fees. So your fees will only continue to go higher and higher. So I'm not telling you not to buy a condominium. Just go in there with eyes completely wide open. Make sure that they are well-funded. Make sure that they have a CapEx account. Make sure there's not a lot of deferred maintenance. The elevator works. The roof is newer. The HVACs don't have to be changed. The parking lots, the painting. Just make sure going eyes open.
Gino, it's interesting because these condo HOA associations in Florida that were, you know, like the one that you described, low funded, didn't keep up over time. You had a bunch of residents that didn't want to pay the fee, right? And yes. So you probably had a weak HOA board that didn't want to fight it, and they just let it go. I mean, these are just residents within the building, right?
Yes.
So if you're going to buy into a condo, think about that perspective, because if it's a low fee and it's an older building, chances are you might have trouble down the road. Whereas you're going to have to pay it either through a special assessment, to his point, or you're going to be paying it monthly to keep it up in good condition. Because it's not like your house where you may do some of this stuff, you may sub some of this stuff out, right? This is going to be subbed out, everything subbed out in a similar way to almost a hotel, right? That's condo living. You hands off, you don't want to do anything if it's run properly. So if there's a low monthly, I would be wary of that. And so if you're going to do it, make sure you have the money to actually do it and know that you want that, because you want that low, you know, kind of.
There's trade-offs.
Care,
low maintenance.
Right?
Yes.
The low maintenance, I don't have to really fix much because it's being taken care of. That's what it is, but you got to pay for it, right?
Yes, I agree. Matt, as you're looking at assets nowadays, how has your strategy evolved from those early days of just, I guess, buying anything that made sense, maybe seller financing, whatever it takes to close the deal? How has that evolved over time for you?
Well, I think that, you know, I think that that's what's been great about my journey is it's not really evolved. It's just been more and faster. You know, I felt like I really picked, you know, spending as much time as I did on the front end, kind of figuring out what I wanted my strategy to be. I knew I didn't want it to be HOA, you know, condos or houses. I knew that I didn't want it to be single family houses because single fault tolerance, right? Most people need both incomes to be able to pay the rent. And so when one of those people loses their job, guess what happens? They're still not paying their rent. Mm-hmm. So I much rather be in a multifamily, small 2, 3, 4 unit residential loan type. And that means that it is based on comps, which means I can find something where it's undervalued because of what else sold, and it has the opportunity to be a much nicer asset. So really what my focus was, you know, in being and in trying to get the cheapest debt, you know, Fannie Freddie passed that rule where they said you can't have 10 mortgages, you can only have 4. Well, I already had 5 at the time. And so it didn't work for me. So I said the only other way that I'm going to get additional assets is one way and one way only, and that is move into them, find a way to fix them up while I'm living in them, and then gives me the opportunity to do that. So that's what the house hack strategy really did for me was I could move into it. I could fix it while it was in it. I could then rent out the side that I fixed up. And then I moved into the other side and I fixed that up while I was living in the other side. You know, there were times when I went with no toilets and no showers and no kitchens, and we just roughed it and figured out how to make it work. But I think small multifamily, 2, 3, and 4 unit stuff is absolutely the best assets to be in and house hacking. I think that people too often say, I'm finally ready to get out of my apartment and buy a house. You're used to sharing walls anyway. What do you care? Like buy a duplex, buy a triplex, buy a quad. And you know, if you have four buildings and you do those over a 10-year period, what did you really lose in life opportunity? You'll create so much more life opportunity for a majority of the rest of your life if you make that early on sacrifice. I think far too many people are get fixated on, I want to buy a single family home.
Gino, real quick, I want to say something on the marketplace for those sized units. So we're buy and hold investors. We very rarely sell. We sold out of Kentucky simply because we didn't like the laws that changed during COVID. So we exited about 500 units out of Kentucky. But besides that, we typically hold. I will say this, though, for that, you know, 2, 3, 4, 6 unit size multifamily, there's a great market because there's a lot of first time people that want to get in. And I think you can get a premium on those types of assets if you know what you're doing. So I think, you know, even though that we typically don't sell, I think if you are in a position where you need to sell something, there's typically a good market on resale for those type of assets. So I do like, you know, they're a little bit more liquid than some of the other multifamily assets. You can get out of them quicker if you need to, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the key for me is that, you know, guys that have, you know, 500 unit counts, right? And it's like they might be in 7 assets. That can be challenging to liquidate a portfolio in that type of a market and not have to take at least
It depends at where you're in the market cycle, right?
Absolutely, 1,000%, right? And that duplex is always liquid. Even in a bad market, that duplex is always liquid. That triplex is always liquid. The quad is always liquid, especially if you're an actual owner-occ. You know, owner-occupant, that thing is always liquid. And, you know, let's face it, I believe that the market's going to take a tumble. It coincidentally will likely be right after the election. It's being propped up, I think, pretty artificially right now. I think we're in for some tougher times in 2025, even the end of 24. And I think that people, you know, that are living paycheck to paycheck, I think that they're more likely to lose a paycheck in that household than they ever have been. Over the course of the next, you know, I mean, we see it continue to tick up and the numbers, that's if you believe them or not, but I see it. I see all, I'm still a hands-on guy. So I see all of the applications that come in. I see all the credit scores. I see all the debt loads. I can't remember the last time I saw somebody that was less than a 35 or 40% DTI. Can't remember the last person I saw like that. You know, it just doesn't happen. Go ahead.
You live in a market that has those types of assets. So somebody listening to this may say, well, I live in the Southeast, all the newer assets. I don't have small assets. In New Hampshire, where you live, the buildings are older. They tend to be built a little bit better. And so understand it is part of the market cycle, but it's also the assets that you're focusing on. We're not here to tell you to buy duplexes or quads. If you live in a market that has bigger assets, I would like to buy bigger assets if I could, because I started out with the smaller assets and Jake and I went, you know, full. You always tend to start smaller because you don't really understand what you're doing. You start with a 4 or 5. We started with a 25 unit. Then we went to a 36 unit. Then we went back down to, then we did 136 units. Then we went back down to a 22 unit. So you need to find your comfort level and especially where you're operating or where you'd like to operate and then focus on that strategy. But I need to ask you, you know, you said you met your wife, you have a melodious voice in church choir. What was she saying? Hey, Matt, I'm living in this house. We're fixing it up and we got to go to the next thing. That's got to be challenging early on. And how did you show her the vision of-
You need that ride or die chick, Gino. That's what it's about. Values, right. Values alignment.
Yeah. I mean, literally, I mean, on our second date, I literally said to her, I said, hey, so I've got a good job now. I really enjoy my job, but I'm in my 20s and I doubt that I'm going to enjoy my job and all the pressures that come with it in my 40s or certainly not my 50s. And I said, so I invest in real estate now. I've already got 5 properties. That's going to be how I retire early. So if you need to think about that, that's fine, but that is not something I'm going to abandon. So no getting in. And that was a very serious conversation on the second date, but we kind of, you know, after the first date, we're just kind of like, this just feels right. And so I had that conversation. She's like, nope, I get it. And so she was somewhat on board. The first place that she saw after we got married that I put an offer in on, she actually walked out of the showing crying. And I just said to her, I said, when have I ever not fixed it and made it right? And she goes, you're right.
You're so
she got through it.
I don't want to be part of this.
Yeah, she was great, but yeah, she recognized real quickly that that I was going to do it and that we needed to do it. And so she was a part of the solution, not part of the problem. You know, when we had some big catastrophic event, she wasn't like, "See, I told you so." She was just like, "All right, so how do we fix it?" So yeah, my wife is that's amazing. The mentality you want. Yeah, she was just a team player from the word go, no matter what it was. And she was like, "We're willing to do it." And I said, "If you want to be a stay-at-home mom where you get to stay at home and the kids can go to whatever schools they want, we can do whatever, any things that we want, we're going to need significant income to do all those things. And this is how we're going to get there."
So I could see Matt.
What are you smirking for over there, Barbaro?
I'm just planning my mind. Grin. I can see Matt. His wife is on the balcony and he's saying to himself, "I'm going to serenade her." Oh, mi sera di sotto al mio balcone sento a cantar una canzone d'amore. Can we please fix this property up? And she's like, "Matt, I love your vision. Let's do it, baby."
So, that's exactly how it went down. I guarantee it, Gina.
It's close. I mean, it's close. No, no balcony.
All he had on was a tool belt, too.
Yeah. No balcony, and the neighbors were throwing stuff at me while I did it, but that's cool. Yeah.
It's because they wanted me to put some clothes on.
Yeah. I was like, "Don't make me come over there. I will come over there. Don't make me come over there." But yeah, it was great. Team player.
It's interesting because people think that it's get rich quick, and you're in your 20s, you've got five assets. And if you're getting rich quick, you're going to get poor even quicker. I think that's what people don't understand, because I think you need to be able to build the muscle. I think you need to understand what cash flow is. And I'm going to ask you the question, what are some of the big mistakes you see, you know, members joining your group? But I think for us, the biggest, there's two big mistakes. I think maybe Jake can pine in real quick on this, but the two biggest mistakes I think that we made, or I made early on, was I didn't treat it as a business. I thought I was just buying assets and there's no systems, there's no processes.
That's everybody. That's the biggest mistake everybody makes.
Yeah. And I think the other biggest mistake was that we're buying everything. That's why we created Buy Right, Manage Right, Finance Right. Because every new investor's like, "I got 10 grand. What should I buy? What's a deal?" And I'm like, "If you got 10 grand, you're the deal. You need to invest in yourself. You need to have skin in the game in yourself and understand what an asset is. You need to understand what you're buying, what your goals are. You need to work on some personal development before you start putting money out and buying these assets." And I think those are the two biggest mistakes. Mr. Stenziano, what say you, brother? What are the mistakes that we make?
No, the personal development thing, people could take that the wrong way as self-serving because we have an education company, but I'll be the first to tell you, I probably logged, I don't know, something ridiculous, like 10 hours a week of business books for like 5 or 6 years when I was doing my outside sales job. Every hour in the car, I was like ridiculously disciplined. And then you and I did many different coachings over the years. So it's like, it could sound self-serving, but it's not. You have to develop your mind because what you're taught in school is not going to translate to business success in the real world. It's like polar opposites. So, exactly. You know, look, there's a million different ways to do it. We're not saying, you know, work with Matt, work with us. If you want to, that's great. This is not a plug here, but you're going to have to develop your mind. If you went the traditional route, like you went to school, I don't care if it's private school or whatever, you're not built for the business world until you do the self-education. And I firmly believe that. So I wanted to tag that on there because it might have came out like, "Oh, we're plugging ourselves," but we're really not. You need to develop your mind and create, you know, a positive mindset that's growth oriented before any of this shit's going to work.
And Matt, before you answer that, the reason why I say that is, like Jake said, you're not born with these skills. I mean, we're at 500 units. We don't know how to scale a company. So we go to Traction and we go to Scaling Up by Ed Varnish's company. What's his name, Jake?
Vern Harnish.
Vern Harnish. I'm sorry. So we use them for 2 years and it isn't cheap. But if we don't use Vern Harnish's company, we are not sitting at 1,800 units right now with over 8 employees. It's just not happening. We probably would have lost a ton of money in the process. So I'm not here to tell you I'm not here to tell you to join ours, but I'm here to tell you, you need to join a community. And if you want to learn how to buy self-storage, find somebody who is really doing it and doing it. You know, find a guru. I can see that Matt's a guru. Jake and Gino are gurus. We're doing it as we're, you know, educating and creating these communities. So that's really important. Matt, what are some of the mistakes that you've seen investors make early on?
Yeah, I think you guys are dead on. I think that, you know, businesses only grow as far as their systems and processes will take them. you know, if you look at, I know, cause I was a corporate fixer. I would go in and I would say, these are what your limitations are. And they're almost always self-inflicted. You know, it's just like, well, this is the way we do it. Why? Cause that's the way we've always done it. Excellent. Are you willing to change to make more money? Well, of course I am. Well, here's the changes. I don't know if we want
exactly.
to do
it that way. I don't know.
Then don't do it that way.
It's all good to the rubber hits the road. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So that's why it's got, you know, you got to be able to, you have to have systems, have processes. There's a reason my course was named, Oh Shit, I'm a Landlord, Now What? I was sitting at the closing table. I had no idea what an estoppel is. I didn't have tenant contact information. I didn't have emails. I had no idea what any of these things were. I hadn't, you know, called in for the last, you know, water check to get that final water bill. I hadn't set up the electricity. So the electricity was going to be off in that building the next day. Literally, I'm sitting there going, shit, I'm a landlord. No, I have no idea what to do next. And I think that, you know, the small multifamily or single family with an ADU, because you can do single families with an ADU all over the country. Those are pretty straightforward. And that's what I talk about, the modern day duplex. The modern day duplex is a single family with an ADU, because that's going to get you the income that you need. So as I'm going through that process, I'm literally looking at it going, I have none of the information that I need. In fact, I'm looking for this sheet of sheetrock and it's not lost. But this sheet of sheetrock is basically, you know, this is, let's see if we get a good view of it. This is your purchase window.
It's bleaching out on the camera, but we believe it's there. I think it's like a scroll that was lost in National Treasure, but I know it's on there.
Is it? So here you've got your purchase window, but here you've got your maintenance window. You know, it's 30 times, 20 times the size of your purchase window. Mm-hmm. So many people spend all their time on purchase. And then they're surprised when they suck at managing their asset. They're surprised when they have tenant turnover. They're surprised when they have more than average maintenance calls.
Well, it's what people said about treating it like a business. People look at it like, I got to buy multifamily because I want to diversify this, that, the other thing. Okay, great. To your point, the point of your program, now what are you going to do once you own it? Like, they don't think that far ahead, right?
Man, no. It's important to note, though, managing an asset and writing an asset management book, it's not sexy. I mean, go out and listen to all the multifamily, you know, gurus out there. I can say we're probably one of the only groups out there that has buy right, manage right,
yes,
and finance right. Everyone's focused on buying and financing the assets, where we like to focus on the managing part, whether that's asset managing, self-property managing, self-doing it yourself, or third party. That's a really important component to it. Buying the assets is probably not the hard thing. Actually increasing NOI and managing a portfolio is what's really challenging. And it seems as if that's what you're focusing on as well, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think the buy right, I think so many people do the buy side. You know, there's 1,000 different ways to do it, whether you're doing, you know, sub two, or you're doing wraps, or you're doing seller financing, or you're doing bank financing, or you're doing owner occ financing. There's 1,000 different ways to get your butt in the unit. And that's not, truthfully, people think that that's the biggest challenge in the beginning. That's just where you begin. Mm-hmm. The biggest challenge is you own that property and day one, you get an emergency phone call with a leak. What's up, Buttercup? What are you doing now? You know, do you have a list of plumbers that you know that you can count on? Do you know how to fix a leak? Do you know the first thing about
it? And neither of those, to me, are a good solution.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the key to that, though, is that, you know, A is, you know, are you in your own area? Are you investing in your own area? So that might not even be an option. So I think the biggest thing for me was managing. I think Gino said it perfectly, which was you either have you know, somebody that's actually your property manager that you can count on to do that stuff, but you have that network set up beforehand, or you have an actual property management company. The key is I don't want a property management firm making more money on my asset than I make. I am diametrically opposed to that as an idea. So the only way that I can do that is if I find a way, what we do is we call it insource property management. We allow you, we show you how to insource the ability to manage your assets and your properties, but you've insourced it. So while the end buck starts with you, you're not having to constantly manage this, you know, manage this property manager who may be good or not, but a lot of them suck, as you know, just like real estate agents, a lot of them suck. And so I think the key to that is really understanding which path am I going down, setting that up before you've actually bought a house so you know who your go-tos are, and then managing through that process. You know, hey, what does it cost to fix that? I have no idea. right? How often do people have any idea what something costs? They're the ones that end up being suckers and pay $2,000 for a $300 service. That's the type of stuff that I want to spend my time teaching people, which is, this is how you always get a fair price for the work that's being done. This is how you always get the work done quickly and efficiently. And that's what actually basically gets you on a better page with your tenant as well. So I just think that on the day-to-day management of things, I think that 90% of landlords, you know, need a whole lot better of a plan of how to manage their asset, not only from a bank side of things, but also from an actual human interaction with how they work with their tenants and how they address maintenance issues.
2 points before I ask you the last question before going to the short answer. The first thing is that landlords need to have a paradigm shift. You're not buying an asset, or you're not starting a business to provide for yourself. You're buying it to provide for your resident or your tenant. And once you understand that, life changes. It's like, wow, okay, I'm not buying this because I like this house and it's cute. It's got granite. You're buying this house because the people that live there need that place. They need a safe, affordable, clean place to live. Once you understand that, that's truly important. And I think once you start buying these assets, you start saying to yourself, I need to manage them and run them like a business. Now, when you're looking at property management, are you using any type of technologies, any kind of property management software, anything that's helping you to manage these assets?
Yeah, up until about 60 units, we were a spreadsheet. That was a bad idea. That was not good. That was horrible.
Yeah, we've been there.
Yeah. And so then I went to DoorLoop. I like DoorLoop a lot. And it gave us the ability to completely 100% automate our business. We spent time setting it up. We've added a lot of things onto it, kind of connections and hook-ons to it. But the core product was there that gave me that basically that ability to transact in their platform, but then use other ancillary products that I added onto it, which helped me automate. You know, so it made my life a whole lot easier, and the amount of activity that I had dropped probably 80% because we were able to automate stuff.
Thanks.
All right, gang, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Now, we have had a great run in multifamily, going from 0 units to over 250 million in assets. That's over 2,000 apartment deals that we've been able to purchase through our framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right.
Now, Jake and I, we created the Jake and Gino community back in 2015. We launched our first book, Yield Our Profits. And since then, our students have closed over 60,000 units. That's over $4 billion in assets they've been able to close over the last 6 years.
And that's why this community has been so successful. We call it results-based education, and we pour back into the community everything that we've learned on our journey from 0 to 2,000 units and all our systems and scale that we use on our very own property management and investing companies.
Jake, I love that. It's not just education, it's implementation. So what I want you to do, click on that link down below, apply to work with our team, see how we can help you on your journey multifamily.
All right, we are back. So I'm not totally clear on this. So do you run your own property management company?
So we aren't a property management company, but we do manage all of our own properties. How's that make it more muddy for you? So basically, I have a couple 1099s that I use. And I also we have one employee, but we did that for other reasons. My daughter had cancer and we needed healthcare when I retired. So that's why we actually had to hire an employee, because we couldn't get access to the doctors that we needed to without actually starting a company. So that's the only reason that we started the company. But it's just one PM. He's the only employee that I have. Everybody else is 1099s that we basically just bring in task oriented to items. So yes.
So I think you have your own property management company with one employee that relies heavily on subs.
Yep. Fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're saying you had bolt-ons. Are you using Property Meld?
No, not using Property Meld.
Okay. This is we're looking at it right now. What about, do you have a maintenance coordinator, like a VA maintenance coordinator, or is it being done by the property manager?
Well, that's the part that we automated. So we have all of our tenants. This is one of the things that we teach in our course, is all of our tenants actually have an emergency number that they can call. They can also text it. And so that all comes into a bucket. And then depending on which avenue it goes, is it alerts either one of the 1099s, or it alerts the PM. It alerts me too, unless I shut off alerts. But it alerts us, and then it gets allocated and then scheduled for something to be done or completed. but that process is 100% automated because it comes through in text. But if they call, it also does, it does, not only does it record it, but it also transcribes it. So right away, they can see anything that comes in, exactly what the issue is. And if it's something they can wait until morning, if it was after five, or something that can be wait until tomorrow or until we can schedule it, or if it's something we need to drop whatever we're doing and get to it. But I've got two people that are on that, essentially a primary and a backup. That way, if something comes in, they see it right away and then it can get scheduled.
So I was waiting for this to happen organically, but apparently it has not. So can we get to the firework part of the show and you tell us the lumberjack story? Because that never came out. We're just calling you a lumberjack. Yeah. You got the beard.
I do. You know,
is this all hat and no cattle, or is there a story here?
There's a story. Being from New Hampshire and working in Massachusetts, and how witty they all are. I showed up in plaid, something like this, but layered, and showed up
to what?
What's that? So,
showed up to what?
To my office.
Okay.
This is everyday wear right here. Show up to my office. Like, oh, what are you, a lumberjack? I was like, sure. And that's how it started. And everyone started calling me lumberjack. They're like, oh, whatever, lumberjack. I was like, all you need to worry about is the board and the fact that I'm dominating you, you know? And so that was how we lived life. And so I was a elite sales guy for a couple decades before I got into senior management. But that's how the lumberjack thing started.
You can handle a chainsaw though, right?
I can. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So like no one's business. I'm not carving bears out in front of my house, but I could if I needed to.
He's got a carved chair out in the front lawn, you know, from his saw work there.
Yeah.
So. Any tips on scaling the business, you know, and anything that really made a big difference that we want to share with the folks?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, you know, I purposefully scaled more slowly because I wanted my assets to be ready to be walked away from and only minor maintenance. So a lot of what I did was making sure that the unit wasn't perfect, but it was clean, safe, upgraded, ready for the market. And, you know, systems had been done, stuff had been taken care of, everything had been fine-tuned. That's one of the nice things about when you house hack is that you get to do that in that house for a year. So you know how everything works, you know how everything should work. You know, everything has been maintained, everything has been brought up to snuff and where it needs to be. And then it's just regular maintenance thereafter. So I think the easiest way to scale is where you're not constantly, I look at when you move on from one building to the next, that if you left a bunch of stuff that still needed to be done, then you're carrying baggage with you. And you get to a certain point where you can only carry so much baggage and you're like, now I'm overwhelmed, but you're overwhelmed by 10 units. And you're overwhelmed by 10 units because you didn't take care of them the right way. So that's when I think people too often are looking for the next deal. And what they need to do, we have three steps: acquisition, stabilization, and optimization. Most people get acquisition, maybe get to stabilization, but optimization is a four-letter word for most people. But that's where I want people spending their time. I want people spending their time getting from stabilized to optimized, because you can get something stabilized, completely ready, so you can move out and move on to the next asset. And then you can optimize little things here and there over time. But I think far too many people move on to their next project before the previous one's really done and kind of bulletproofed and ready for the market and ready for renters, where they're not going to place a bunch of maintenance calls.
Any book recommendations, any education that you've absorbed in the last year or two that you want to share?
Lumberjack Landlord course. That's fantastic if you want to start the right way, in all honesty. A lot of people are looking for mentors. You guys see it, right? How many people need mentors? And the amount of money that you spend on education from the right educators will save you tenfold in a few years' time. And so I'm not a big book guy. I'm a big doer guy. I like watching the process of other doers. And that's how I learn. I don't learn from reading a book and then trying to apply it. I learn far more from people that are doers in what they're talking about. And then I know that they have that firsthand experience. That way when they say, oh, go do this, you're not like, yeah, you've clearly never done it before, right? So I'm a big watching doers guy. And if I'm seeing you do it and I know how you've done it, okay, now we're talking, because now I know that I just have to replicate that.
What are you, a lumberjack?
I am. It's true.
Gino, take us home, dude.
So yeah, lumberjack Matt at the age of 15, he's like, I don't want to go to school. I got to get myself a job. I'm not even qualified to work at Blockbusters. So I got to work somewhere else making $5 an hour. I meet this lady. $5.25. I meet this lady. She's like, I got a job for you. I'm in software. And Matt's like, oh, you make computers? She's like, no, it's software. Damn it. There's a difference between hardware and software. So he goes and works. He makes 18 G's his first year. Telemarketing. You know, the guys that pick up the phone and go, hi, hey, may I help you? That kind of thing. At that time, we were still in America. They weren't in India. So he was in New Hampshire doing his gig. And all of a sudden, he falls in love with real estate. He meets his wife at church. On the second date, he tells her, you know, honey, I love you with all my heart, but I love this real estate thing. And in the next 2 decades, I'm going to be leaving my job and I'm going to be getting the real estate. Are you on board? And she thankfully said, yes, I'm on board. I see your vision. Matt starts house hacking, one little house, another little house. And before you know it, after 20 something years, this year in February, he leaves his job with over 50 buildings and he starts building his platform as well. So listen, kudos to you. I mean, it's the long game. And you know, one thing I need to reiterate from your story is everybody out there, Matt is the small giants of the multifamily space and he is not outgrowing his infrastructure. He's working on his three-step framework, which is really important. You're buying these assets, you got to manage them, and then ultimately, you've got to optimize them. It sounds like a great story and a great framework for your life as well.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Well said, G. Dad. Our pleasure. Gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He is the G-Daddy, and that's the Lumberjack. We'll see you next time. Thank you.